And delighted to be with you again. Thrilled, because today we are blessed with the presence of a wondrous man from Canada, Mahmoud Vali Muhammad, who has done some wonderful work. I mean, get ready for a fun experience as we bring more value into your life. And, of course, invite you, tell your friends about the program and have pencil and paper ready so that you can get ready for some fun and jot down notes on things, because we'll be getting some good tips to help us. A little bit about our guest today. Mahmoud is the founder and director of Art of Happy Life. Yes, a health and wellness center in Ontario, Canada. And he's the author of Book of Wisdom and The Art of Witnessing. He is certified in various diverse areas, and these include holistic health, nutrition, psychotherapy and counseling, and basic Ayurveda, the study of health from India. And he's also does professional relaxation therapy. He's certified as a meditation teacher, Reiki master, and past life regression therapist. That's a fabulous combination. And he conducts various health and wellness workshops on a regular basis. And get ready for this, he also offers online and phone consultations, which you're going to be more interested in as you get a chance to hear his voice and hear what he has to say. And he's studied at the School of Natural Health Sciences at the Reiki Blessings Academy and is a member of the International Healers Association. His main purpose is to use holistic approaches to balance and heal the body. And, of course, one of the things that I'm so touched by is his theme where he says, we're going to have an opportunity to discover how simple changes in your lifestyle can lead to a happier and balanced life. With all that in mind, I'm happy to and delighted to welcome Mahmoud Vali Muhammad. Mahmoud, are you there?
Hello, Ken, and thank you for that wonderful introduction.
That's a pleasure. I'm just so delighted. I have enjoyed the opportunity to take some time to listen to your CD on the Art of Witnessing and to listen to some of that meditation, which, my goodness, you bless us, because people can go to your website, www.artofhappylife.com. Did I get that correct?
Absolutely. That's absolutely correct.
And then with this Book of Wisdom, wow, you've written that, what, how many years ago?
Book of Wisdom, that's a good question. I think I wrote it in the original manuscript. I believe I wrote it in 1997.
Okay. Oh,
yes.
Wow. Well, I've enjoyed it thoroughly. Now, can you tell me what was some of the original inspiration for this Book of Wisdom?
I have always been interested in spirituality and meditation and especially Eastern philosophies. So I remember this one morning I was having my breakfast and all of a sudden my mother tells me, why don't you write a book? So I said to her, you want me to write a book? So she said, yeah, why not? And, you know, you're interested in Eastern philosophies and you like meditation and spirituality and so on. So then I thought about it for a while and then I said, you know, that's not a bad idea. And that's when I started writing.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there's certainly a lot of beauty in this. Now, this book covers a whole bunch of different topics that can help a person on their path. Who do you think that would benefit from reading this Book of Wisdom that you wrote?
Book of Wisdom shares universal concepts that apply to individuals of all backgrounds. It's an easy-to-understand book that uses simple language and concepts to help us transform our lives. And I think that regardless of our personal, ethnic, or religious background, we are all guided and subject to the same laws of spirituality, compassion, forgiveness, karma, which basically means your actions. We hear that word a lot. Suffering and personal growth. These are all universal spiritual concepts that apply to all of us. So in my opinion, this book offers practical examples which can be read by multiple generations of the family, from the youngest to the oldest. Simplicity has always been one of the key things in my book and in my way of life and in my understanding of spirituality. I think that all the great things in life, including spirituality, come in simple packages. So I think simplicity is the theme that's being used throughout my book. So there's simple language, simple concepts, and, you know, simple examples that can help us in our day-to-day life.
Oh, well, that's great. And today with everyone in the world kind of trying to figure out how do we all get along, it looks like you've blended in your book things, wisdom from Hinduism, Buddhism, Sufism, Christianity. Did you set out deliberately to do all that?
My perspective has always been very open-minded. I think that spirituality is fluid and dynamic. Being rigid is contrary to my way of thinking. I have the greatest respect for all the spiritual traditions and religions. I believe that all the great saints and sages and spiritual masters spoke a universal spiritual language, and the wisdom they provided to mankind should all be respected. I have always admired the wisdom from various spiritual traditions, including Hinduism, Buddhism, Christianity, Sufism, Zen masters, and various other mystical teachings. So what I've tried to do is I've tried to include all the essential teachings from all these wonderful traditions, in my opinion. And I've tried to put that in a very simple language into Book of Wisdom in a way where I think that it captures perhaps the essence in a very simple manner of all the great spiritual teachings of all the great masters.
Wow, that's a wonderful thing to be able to distill that and to offer that. I know oftentimes we're wondering profound questions of our lives, and it's kind of intrigued me because in your book you ask a profound question: what is my purpose on earth? And I'm just kind of wondering, can you help shed that, because that's a very powerful question for anyone to ask.
Sure. I believe that all of us come to earth with a great purpose. Each one of us has a unique mission to fulfill. I think that on a spiritual level, we have all signed a contract with creation that we will fulfill certain requirements while we are on this planet. The essential message of all the Eastern philosophies, in my opinion, and all the spiritual and religious traditions is one and the same, and the universal message is, first of all, be a good human being. Creation has provided many opportunities to help us with our personal and spiritual growth. I think that this planet is like a great school of learning, with lots of different courses and subjects to choose from. There are two basic dimensions that we live in, the physical and the spiritual. And the physical is something that we're quite familiar with as we live in it, on a day-to-day basis. The physical dimension basically revolves around the five senses and the human mind. We have our usual activity like working and sleeping and eating and family relationships and so on and so forth. Now, on the other end, the spiritual dimension, I think, is something that perhaps we are not as familiar with. And this is one area we need to focus on, as essentially the spiritual and religious philosophies are emphasizing, and that is to keep a balance between the two. I think that if we try to understand life through the normal five sensory perception, then we may be limiting our perception of life. I think that there's all kinds of miracles happening every moment. It's our inner eyes that need to open to witness these miracles. And the key is to live each moment consciously. So I believe that this planet is a great school of learning, and before we were born, we all chose certain lessons because we all have some certain strengths and weaknesses. So all the different circumstances in life, like our family, our career, all the good things, all the bad things, our health, and so on and so forth, we've chosen these on some level to help us to grow, to become more spiritual beings.
Mm. Wow. Okay. Well, that helps to give that some thought. A person may or may not believe that, but if they do, great. If they don't, then my invitation, based on reading through your book, would be to just pretend for a moment that you had made some contract and that there was some particular lessons for your life. I know as I look at the chapter titles in your book, they're quite interesting. Got my attention, for instance, suffering. A blessing in disguise. Oh, okay. I mean, that sheds a different light on there. And then the power of silence. Ooh. and then intrigued to learn more about where we have the different levels of the soul. Mahmood, this, would you kind of help out with some of that here a little bit?
Sure, I can try. Okay, the various chapter titles that I chose are, in my opinion, fundamental concepts that are necessary for our spiritual growth. I believe that there are many different aspects to a human, and we need to focus on all these aspects in order for us to grow spiritually. And some of these include understanding suffering from a deeper perspective and realizing that it may be a blessing in disguise. The importance of forgiveness, the power of silence, the law of karma, and different levels of the soul. As you mentioned, these are some of the chapters that I focus on. And the reason I chose these chapters is because I think that they all represent a certain aspect of spirituality that we need to be aware of so that they will help us to grow.
Mm. Oh, yes, that makes sense. I know I was captured on page 60 of your book. It's in the chapter called Total Surrender, and there was this sentence here that says, accept everything that revolves around your daily life. And, boy, I guess I don't know if you can help out, because it's easy to read that sentence, and I can get a sense that, of course, that's profound. I'm wondering, is there a gem of wisdom or something you could help with listeners to support them in being more accepting of things, especially when there's challenges involved?
Absolutely. I think that there's not a single person on earth that doesn't go through a difficult moment at one time or another. Human beings are facing all kinds of difficulties. It could be physical illness, it could be financial problems, it could be disabilities, it could be political problems or war or people dying and so on and so forth. So it does take a lot of courage to, first of all, try to accept your circumstances or whatever difficulties they may be. But I also believe from a spiritual point of view that we're placed in these circumstances so that they can help us to learn and so that they can help us to grow. Spirituality, in my opinion, another word for spirituality, in my opinion, is compassion, to help others or, you know, to forgive others or to be nice to others or just to do something to those people around you, because we're all connected in one way or another. Now, that statement that you made, I believe it's from the chapter of Total Surrender. And I'm giving examples, I think, of some Sufis, which are basically people into on the mystical path of spiritual enlightenment. But the stories that I've heard of Sufis or even Zen masters or perhaps people who are into the dimension of spiritual growth or mysticism. It could be Eastern mystics, or it could be Christian mystics, or they could be Sufi mystics. A lot of them, in their stories, they're expressing quite a bit of difficulties and quite a bit of pain because they have to go through difficult moments. But what I have also picked up, or in my understanding, what I feel is that that suffering, all the difficult circumstances that you've put in one way or another, we've chosen that to help us to grow, to become more spiritual beings. Now, from a physical point of view, suffering and surrendering to your circumstances is not easy. It's very difficult. But I also feel that in order for you to go into spiritual enlightenment, in order for you to come closer to God, let's say, or your Creator, this suffering is a preparation ground, because I believe you need a lot of courage to be in the presence of enlightenment or to be in the presence of God. And the first step of doing that, of coming closer to God, is to totally surrender to your circumstances and acknowledge it and try to work with it and try to grow with it.
Mm. Okay. Okay, well, that's important. I really appreciate the, because that way we can look at those things from a different perspective. When we're in the midst of it, it's a challenge, and yet to be mindful, wait, a lesson is here. What is the lesson? How is this going to help me grow into a better spiritual person and a better person on earth? And from that perspective, it can be easier to go through those experiences, I would guess. Thank you. I have to be careful. I went onto your website, Mahmood, and on the top there of artofhappylife.com, artofhappylife.com, artofhappylife.com. There's a beautiful picture there. Folks, you've got to go see that, if for nothing else but that beautiful picture. And then for me, I took a moment and started listening to that free audio that you have on your website. And beautiful. I've just been in this wonderful, wonderful space. So to me, I think one of the answers that I can say from personal experience of just enjoying what you offer on your website, to listen to that recording and help us to go into that calmer space as a way to have some respite from some of the challenges sometime. Thank you so much. A quick question. Now, can you share a little bit more about forgiveness? We hear that you got to learn to forgive, forgive, forgive. Can you tell us a little bit about what you feel is important, and maybe any hints about how to accomplish more forgiveness?
Sure. Forgiveness is such a powerful energy that it can heal you on many levels. Scientists and psychotherapists claim that it is essential for proper health and wellness. It is also necessary for spiritual enlightenment. Now, I think that there can be many levels of forgiveness. According to Eastern philosophies, if one person harms another person, just as an example, then God cannot forgive you on behalf of someone else. Each person, in a sense, is accountable for their own actions. And if they have done something wrong to another person, then they have to seek forgiveness from that person. Now, quite often when a patient, let's say there's a patient that is suffering from a chronic illness like depression, arthritis, or even cancer, and conventional medicine does not respond, a psychotherapist will quite often tell their patients that they need to forgive a particular person in order to heal themselves. And remarkably, quite often the patient makes a full recovery once they have forgiven. This is something that I was learning in my psychotherapy course as well. So science, psychotherapy, and spirituality have a common agreement that forgiveness is such a powerful energy that it heals you on all levels. Now, forgiveness is not as easy as it sounds, you know, as you were mentioning before. And there are many different levels to forgiveness. First, you have to, if you can come to a realization that every action has a reaction, you know, what goes around comes around. So if just imagine if there's another person in the room that's talking to you, if they're talking to you in a very sweet tone, in a very polite way, like the way we're talking right now, then that other person will appreciate it. But if that other person was to say something nasty to you, just as an example, it's going to hurt you. It's going to hurt you emotionally. It's going to hurt you mentally. And it's going to hurt you spiritually as well. So the law of karma, in a sense, and the concept of forgiveness are linked. But forgiveness has many different levels. First, you have to consciously come to a realization that, you know what, I need to seek forgiveness, perhaps, from those people around me. I may have said something wrong, or I may have done something wrong. And then once you have asked for forgiveness, I think that you need to give forgiveness to others as well. That's a part of your spiritual growth. Once that happens, once you can go consciously within yourself and say, you know what, I'm asking for forgiveness for the people around me, and I'm giving forgiveness as well. What you want to do at that point in time is you want to move on and let go of your past. And what I mean by that is sometimes we can find it in ourselves to forgive a person, but then 2 months or 3 months or 5 months down the line, that thought or that memory or that particular incident may come back, and, you know, we'll start thinking bad about that person again because he did this to me or she did this to me. So at that time, again, you have to remind yourself that you have to forgive. So what I'm saying is forgiveness is an ongoing process. It's an art. It's not just something that you can say with your mouth or your mind, okay, I forgive you, and that's it. It's something that you really have to work on, and I think it's something that you have to do probably for your whole life because there are many different levels to forgiveness.
Ah, okay. Okay, yeah. So it's not an event. It is, as you say, a process, and we get to check in with ourselves. How are we? Did some negative feelings come up, or some anger, resentment come up? Ah, there's the feedback that lets us know more opportunities for forgiveness. And I also want to mention that this is live, and there's some toll-free numbers in case people may want to ask you some questions directly. In the U.S., it's 877-876-5227. Up in Canada, 888-815-9756. Or internationally, 530-876-3222. Now, I'm curious, too. In our world, people often are reaching out for more intimacy, and you have a chapter titled Loneliness and Aloneness. And would you explain a little bit about why you feel that that was a critical addition to your Book of Wisdom?
Sure. Loneliness and aloneness are opposites. Loneliness is a negative state of mind, and aloneness is positive. Fear, insecurities, depression, and attachment can manifest in the form of loneliness. On the other hand, aloneness leads you to bliss. It leads you to freedom and spiritual enlightenment. To be lonely means to miss the presence of another. We can be missing our family or our friends or some form of entertainment or sometimes even work. The mind requires constant occupation, and it becomes insecure when it has nothing to do. Now, when we can transform this loneliness to aloneness, then a great transformation takes place within us, and we become blissful, and we experience freedom. And the simple way to do this is simply to spend more time with yourself in silence. You can be alone with nature, do a small meditation, or do some kind of activity, or, you know, try sitting alone with yourself. The idea here is to try to get comfortable with yourself. I think we're living in a society where there's a lot of competition and there's a lot of stress. And, you know, when there's a long weekend coming up, for example, we have to make sure we book something in advance, you know, either going to a cottage or take a trip to Florida and so on and so forth. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't do those things, but a lot of what we do on our day-to-day basis is based on the fact that we're insecure because we don't know how to sit alone and do anything. And up to a certain point, if you don't get comfortable with yourself, if you don't get comfortable with your soul or your inner essence, then there will always be a state of insecurity inside of you. So this is a critical distinction, I believe, between loneliness and aloneness. And at some point, I think all of us will have to approach aloneness.
Ah, okay. Well, it's interesting because there's an old saying that says, no one can love you more than you love yourself. And so,
that is incredible. So true.
And so here, by taking some time with what you call this importance of being this aloneness, to me, I'm hearing you describe an opportunity for us to take that time to literally fall in love with ourselves and what's around us, so that then, through that law of attraction, what goes around comes around, we are now giving a clear message about receiving powerful love, because we're sharing powerful love with ourselves. Wow.
Absolutely. That was quite wonderful what you said.
Oh, see, well, that's a key to understanding that aloneness and how important that is. Thank you for including that in your book. This is definitely a gem of a book here. Now, can people get this by going to your website to order these things?
Yes, absolutely. They can go to artofhappylife.com and they can get it from there. It's also available at Amazon, on amazon.com. It's always available online. So if there's anyone that's interested, or if they have any questions, they can just come online and they can get in touch with us.
Sure. Now, I'm curious. I don't know if you have a particular type of program, or if you, when people would come and want assistance, either in person or online or on the phone, or is it kind of custom tailored to each individual? Can you help out a little bit there?
Sure, absolutely. I offer, for those people that I cannot physically get in touch with, I offer online and phone consultations, and there are many different types. I'm a certified nutritionist as well. And I'm certified in basic Ayurveda as well. Ayurveda is an Eastern philosophy. It's an Eastern holistic medicine. So I can give consultations in one of several areas. It can be nutrition. It could be holistic medicine. It can be psychotherapy and counseling. It could be spiritual counseling. And I also have one program. It's called the Complete Body, Mind, Spirit program. That program is basically based on the fact that each person has a unique constitution, physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. So there are certain diet factors that correspond to a certain body type, and then there are certain exercises that are better for you, and then there are certain yoga and meditation practices that correspond to you. It's based on the fact that each person, is born with a unique constitution, and this, is connected to Eastern philosophies. Each person that's born on Earth, genetically and as far as their constitution is concerned, is unique. And also the level of your soul, your karma, you know, who your parents are, it puts you in a totally unique category. So this particular program, in a sense, helps to identify who you are and what your ideal diet, lifestyle, meditation, exercise, so on and so forth, what it should be, because it varies from person to person.
Sure. Okay. So it's customized, and you can make determinations. It sounds like fairly quickly from an interview to be able to then guide someone with some very specific things. Wow, that's excellent.
Yes. There's a certain chart that I have, and you know, I would be asking certain general questions, and that would help me to identify who that person is, because I've always believed that each person is very unique. So, you know, one man's food, for example, is another man's poison. As a nutritionist, I've seen a banana, for example, which has potassium, calcium, and, you know, fiber, and so on and so forth. A nutritionist will tell you, well, a banana is great for you. But I know some people that are intolerant to bananas. So a banana might be good for you, but it won't be good for me. So this particular test would help me to determine what category I fall into, and ideally what foods to have. And then you can apply the same terminology to the type of exercise, lifestyle, type of meditation, and so on and so forth.
Mm.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's excellent. Being able to have some awareness of things, because I've talked to a number of people, and a chiropractor that I spent years going to when I was in California, he got tremendous results with his patients when he started telling them about blood type and making recommendations nutritionally based on blood type. So
The Eat Right for Your Type. Actually, in my Body, Mind, Spirit program, I include part of my assessment is through the blood type, like you said, because O blood types, A blood types, and B blood types, they have a totally different metabolism. You know, one of the key things that comes up is, for example, a vegetarian diet You know, a lot of people who are into meditation say vegetarian diet is good. Well, according to the blood type theory, O blood types have to have a little bit of meat protein, a little bit of animal protein to metabolize. So just to give you a quick example, there's a client that came to me who had gone from a meat eater to a vegetarian. And when she turned into a vegetarian, she started losing weight and she became weak. So then she was recommended to eat a little bit of animal protein, and then her weight and her endurance came back. And then there are other people who do really well on vegetarian diet. That's why I say that one man's food is another man's poison, and each person is totally unique. Each person's constitution is individual, so they have to be individually treated. You can't put everyone in the same category.
Sure. Now I don't know if you can help with this. This is a bit of a reach of a question for you. There's a person that I know, and I believe they're O type, and they're very much confirmed as a vegetarian and avoid meat in any way, morally and dietarily. And I don't know if there would be something when a person is very spiritual about helping them to feel comfortable about eating meat.
That's a very good question. And, you know, it's a question that a lot of mystics and spiritual teachers debate on. Because, you know, vegetarianism, if you look at Eastern philosophies like Hinduism, Buddhism, and even Jainism, they believe in vegetarianism because they don't believe in eating something, you know, that's inanimate. They don't believe in eating flesh that's been living at one time or another. But I think that perhaps the problem we run into is if you look at the blood type theory, just as an example, all blood types are their ancestors of hunters. Their forefathers used to be hunters, so they used to eat meat all the time. A blood types are supposed to be vegetarians. Now, there are people who come to me that are in all different categories. Like, I've treated people that are O blood type. I've treated people that are A blood type. And I've also had people who come to me that are from Eastern backgrounds who are supposed to be on a vegetarian diet. But guess what? When they eat vegetarian diet, they can't digest a lot of the beans and the lentils, number one. And number two, their B complex, their vitamin B and iron levels are always very low, so they become weak. So initially, they were born in a tradition where they had to eat vegetarian diet, but they ended up becoming sick. So the doctor told them, you know what, you're going to have to eat some animal protein in order for your body to metabolize properly. So here's the question. If you want to follow a spiritual tradition, but say physically by eating a vegetarian diet, say you become unhealthy. If you become unhealthy physically, then how are you going to progress spiritually? Because the human body is a temple of God. Okay? So on the one hand, vegetarian diet can be an excellent diet if it works for you, if it agrees with you. On the other hand, if you're having a vegetarian diet and say it doesn't work for you, say you're an O blood type, like I am, I'm an O blood type. I have to have some animal protein. Say I turn vegetarian and I become sick. Well, then if I become physically sick, then that's going to hinder my spiritual path as well. Right? And just to shed some more light on that, there are some spiritual masters who actually emphasize on vegetarianism, like if you look at Hinduism, for example, or Buddhism. And then there are other spiritual masters from what I've read, like Jesus Christ or Prophet Muhammad, who have allowed it, provided when you eat meat, you're conscious of what you're eating. You have to say a prayer, and you know, you have to thank God for that food, and you have to ask for forgiveness, in a sense, from the meat that you're eating. And I think that up to a certain extent, it's been allowed for you by the laws of nature. Because even if you look at the animal chain in the jungle, there are animals that eat other animals, right? There are animals don't eat vegetarianism all the time. Now, this can be a topic of big debate, but basically what it comes down to is this. You want to keep yourself physically healthy, and if you're physically healthy, the human body is a temple of God. Then you can progress spiritually, too.
Okay. Well, that's helpful. That way a person can have some feedback.
Right.
And to realize that there's different traditions. I was touched by the movie The Gods Must Be Crazy. Many people have seen that, and in that, the Bushmen of the Kalahari, they eat meat, and they very carefully they'll take a small arrow with an anesthetic, and shoot an animal, and the animal barely feels anything, goes to sleep, and they go up and pray to the animal and express the need of the family and thank it for for giving its life to the survival of their family. Very, very spiritually done. It was a thing of beauty to see. And I know my yoga teacher years ago made mention that if things are done with a consciousness and a reverence and a respect, that makes all the difference in the world. So I'm hearing that you're saying that kind of thing.
Yeah, what you said is so profound, and I'm so happy to hear that, because even in other traditions like Islam, just as an example, in Islam, the Prophet Muhammad said that you have to make the meat halal. Halal is just a process where it's basically a religious process where if an animal is going to be killed, it has to be killed in the right way, and you have to say prayers. So, for example, you have to cut the animal in a way, like the vein or the jugular vein, just as an example. If you cut a little part of the vein, the blood will come out and the animal will have a very easy death, almost an effortless death. So this consciousness and awareness that you're talking about and this example that you gave is very similar and parallel to, for example, what the Prophet Muhammad taught or even some of the other great masters taught, that if you are going to end up eating meat, then that animal that dies deserves to have a very sacred and religious death. And in a way where it would be pain-free, where, they're not going to have a lot of pain. And that awareness, and that thankfulness, I think, is what God looks at.
Yeah. Wow. There you go.
Yeah.
Boy, just finding spirituality in so many areas. That's beautiful. Now, in your book, I was wondering here, there's a quotation that says, "Life is a precious gift, a gift to be cherished each and every moment. Live each moment to the fullest." Can you give a little bit more about what inspired you and what you'd like us to glean from that?
Sure. That's a very good question. And, it actually took me quite a while to come up with that statement. You can say they sort of dropped one piece at a time, like a piece of a puzzle. So, I first got a couple of words, and then I thought about it, and then I got a few more words, and, little pieces of the puzzle were dropping one at a time. So this is what I ended up coming up with. Now, I believe that life on Earth is the greatest gift given to us by Mother Nature. Personal growth, evolution of the soul, making mistakes and learning from them all take place on this planet. There are all kinds of miracles happening every moment. Our inner eyes need to open to witness these miracles. And I think that the key is to live each moment consciously. Eastern philosophies talk about what a blessing it is to take birth on this great planet. Even though there are all kinds of suffering and challenges and difficulties that we experience, this planet shows us the way to spiritual growth, to freedom, to happiness, and to enlightenment. And I think that even if you look at the philosophies of all the Eastern masters, like the Zen masters, for example, they talk about living in the moment. By the way, the word Zen actually comes from the Sanskrit word dhyan. And dhyan actually means consciousness or awareness. So sometimes when you hear the word Zen master literally means either a master of awareness or a meditation master. So the word Zen and the word meditation actually comes from the Sanskrit word dhyan. And a lot of people or a lot of scholars say that Sanskrit is the root of all languages or the mother of all languages because it's the oldest language on the planet, I believe. And one way or another, everything is connected to that. So the whole point of meditation or Zenism or consciousness is just to become totally aware of each moment and to become conscious at all times. Become conscious of what you're eating, conscious of what you're saying, how you treat other people, how you're working, how you're treating the planet. It all has to do with consciousness. And when this statement came and when I put the statement in the book, life is a precious gift, a gift to be cherished each and every moment. Live each moment to the fullest. That's what I was sort of trying to point the finger to, that you have to try to live each moment with consciousness, and that's the key to living a great life of enlightenment.
Yes. Now, it was interesting because of what you're mentioning to get us on that path and to be healthy. I was noticing on your website an interesting testimonial from a woman, Noreen, who is a public health nurse. So, this is someone that you would think would have had some knowledge on their own, and yet yet her statement really bespeaks of the benefit of coming to you for some consultation. She says this complete life-changing program for health, happiness, and balance helped me to determine my individual body type and make a number of specific changes according to my unique body requirements. This helped to regulate my weight, energy levels, and overall health. I was able to learn what diseases I was predisposed to and to make the appropriate changes. Because this program incorporates several different holistic principles, I got a very clear picture of what changes I need to make for optimal health. She goes on to say, this program has made a significant difference in my life. Talk about something to be able, with what I'm hearing from you, brief consultations, some awareness, some being able to make some simple changes that can have a profound impact on our lives. This is great. I mean, my beloved listeners out there, I want to encourage you, of course, to go to theartofhappylife.com and take a look at Momud's website there, and then to be able to start to learn about how he can support you. Please do, for your own well-being, if you do nothing more, then go to that website and click on Listen Free Audio and take a few minutes to listen to that. We're going to talk about his Art of Witnessing CD, and you can get a sample of that, of a guided meditation. Oh, if you do nothing more than that, and I have a feeling that many of you are going to want to call him. Now, while I'm thinking of calling you, what number would people want to call you on?
They can reach me at 416-737-9699. I'll just repeat that one more time. It's area code 416-737-9699.
Okay. Great, and then of course that information is listed on your website too.
That information is on the website. What the program, an overall basis of the program, and what it entails, and you know some of the benefits of that program. And by the way, that testimonial that you just read of Noreen, she's listening to your show right now. She was very excited to hear that, you know, you were going to put me on as a guest speaker. So she's listening to it as we speak.
Well, that's wonderful. It's just great to see that some simple changes can actually have a profound impact on our well-being. And of course, you know, if we got a map out and we're going from one city to another, and we went in the wrong direction, other people could be going in that direction. It could be just right for them, but we've got to find the path for us that works best. And here you are helping people to very quickly make some of those determinations and then offer guidance on a number of areas. And to me, what I like best of all is that it's all tied in to spirituality. Because I think I know most religions have something. Well, the Ten Commandments, Lord thy God, put no other gods before me, or seek first the kingdom and its righteousness, and then all things will be added unto you. So, and I would suspect that other spiritual teachings talk about the importance of connecting to God, and here you are helping us to get healthier so that we have the strength and energy to help connect more deeply, and as we connect more deeply, we get more health. It is just what an upward spiral you've laid out here for us. Wow.
Absolutely. What you're saying is also so profound, and I must say that I'm really enjoying being on your show. The connection is so good, and I think even your show, you're doing an incredible job, and it's just the connection right now, I think, from a spiritual point of view, is just so strong, and it's an honor and a pleasure for me to be on your show. I just wanted to add that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you too, Momud. Now, let me ask you a little bit. There's this new thing, this Art of Witnessing CD, and of course, that leaves like, what does this Art of Witnessing mean?
Very good question. Well, in Book of Wisdom, as you probably know, one of my chapters is called The Art of Witnessing. And, you know, a few years after I wrote the book, I felt that I could expand on that concept because the chapter in the book is basically a very short chapter. So I thought I could expand on it. Now, I've always been interested in Eastern philosophies like Hinduism and Buddhism and Zen masters, as well as Christianity and Sufism and other spiritual traditions. And I've always felt that the common message that all these great traditions talk about is to achieve a higher level of awareness. If you're constantly aware of your thoughts, your actions, and your behavior, then I believe this becomes a practical form of meditation for you. So this time I was inspired to make an audio CD instead of a book, and I also wanted to include a short and simple meditation based on the concept of witnessing. So the Art of Witnessing CD basically talks about meditation and witnessing in two forms. One is practical witnessing and one is silent witnessing. And practical witnessing basically is something that you can apply on a day-to-day basis to help to transform your life. And then silent witnessing is that actual meditation that you heard online.
Ah, oh, okay. Wow, so two types of witnessing. And can you expound a little bit more about some of the benefits of witnessing, how we go about doing that more?
Sure. The art of witnessing is basically a simple method that helps you to achieve a deeper level of awareness. This simple technique helps us on all levels, physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. To be a witness, you simply have to become an observer. Your goal is to become consciously aware of every single moment. This will help you to control your emotions, your anger, your stress, and some of the other factors that take us away from awareness. Now, this concept was originally inspired by Eastern philosophies. In the philosophy of Zen Buddhism, this is known as the beginner's mind. You treat each minute moment as a new and life-enhancing experience. Now, in the Buddhist tradition, this is known as vipassana, or mindfulness, as you mentioned earlier. Although the art of witnessing is inspired by Eastern philosophies, they are very practical concepts that we can basically use in our day-to-day life. So the art of witnessing is something that helps you to achieve a higher level of awareness, and it's something that you can apply in your day-to-day life.
Okay. And so in the art of witnessing, it's sort of like inviting us to expand. Most of the time, people have a point of view in an interaction of how's this working out for me? What's going on with me? How am I feeling? How's this doing? And that's one point of view, one perspective, seeing something through one's own eyes. And it sounds like in this art of witnessing, we're invited to also experience some other perspectives, like of this observer, looking in at ourselves, interacting in a circumstance, and having some of that detachment, so that we're free of what can be some of the judgment. Sometimes if we're evaluating ourselves in the middle of something or after something, there's a saying about artists, they're oftentimes their biggest critic. And self-criticism can be quite harsh. And I'm guessing, is this art of witnessing and some of this detachment, is that one of the ways to deal with some of that criticism? Or
Absolutely. I think you're right on there. Art of witnessing teaches you how to emotionally and mentally detach yourself and to look at things from a deeper perspective without any emotional bias. And you can actually apply this simple technique when you're working, for example. Say there's a conflict between you and your supervisor or you and your boss. If you can become a witness, then you can avoid that personal conflict. And you can use the same method in relationships, while you're driving, with your family members. And it also teaches you how to witness your own thoughts and your own emotions. Like, for example, if we have a lot of fear or a lot of anger or jealousy inside of us, then this method actually teaches us to witness our own thoughts. You know, take a neutral standpoint, and you know what? Just create a little bit of distance between your thoughts and your consciousness, and you'll see how to differentiate between the two. And as you use this particular method on an ongoing basis, you become better and better. It's almost like an art. You know, the more you practice it, in a sense, the better you get at it. But the main idea here is just to keep yourself detached, emotionally and mentally detached from everything else. And this can, I think, help you all around to be a better person. It can make you a better worker, a better family person, and also it can take you a higher level into a higher level of awareness.
Wow! Wow! Okay, boy, that sounds important to me. I know this piece here that you've included on your CD, The Art of Witnessing, which having spent some time with it, I highly recommend this to people, which they can get from your website, artofhappylife.com. Now, on here, you included this meditation, and not everyone is spending time in meditation. Could you briefly bring in some insights and some support about the importance of meditation?
Sure. I think that when I was compiling this CD, I really thought that without meditation, the CD would be incomplete. As I mentioned earlier, there are two fundamental aspects to witnessing. One is practical and one is silent witnessing. And both of them go hand in hand. Silent witnessing is a form of meditation. Now, meditation essentially comes from a Sanskrit word, which essentially means awareness or consciousness. As I mentioned before, meditation comes from the Sanskrit word dhyan, which means awareness or consciousness. You know, you've probably heard of Zen masters. They always refer to meditation or awareness. Now, sometimes the word meditation can be vague, and it can mean different things to different people. Especially to someone, who is not into meditation. So you hear this word quite often, but I think that there's a very simple answer to that. Now, there are many different techniques that one can use when they're meditating. You hear somebody focusing on a mantra or a word, or sometimes in Zen Buddhism they focus on the breath, or sometimes you focus on the energy centers. Now, meditation basically just means awareness or consciousness. Meditation is to make you more aware of your spirit, of your inner essence. Now, how you do that, there are many different methods. And, there's no one method for one person. As I mentioned before, each one of us is different. That's why when it comes to meditation, there are different types of techniques that you can use. Some focus on a word, some focus on a breath, and some focus on energy centers. Some do it with visualizations and so on. Now, with that in mind, I use a technique in the CD which is called silent meditation, silent witnessing meditation. Now, this is a very simple form of meditation, and it simply requires you to witness your thoughts. Witness your thoughts, embrace them, and finally release them. I think that thoughts are the greatest barriers to spiritual enlightenment, and once you let go of them, you are prepared to experience an unprecedented level of awareness. And this particular meditation, the silent witnessing meditation, is something that can be done by beginners as well as those people who practice it regularly. So once again, meditation is not something that has to be complicated. You don't have to go into the mountains or into the Himalayas, or to a retreat to meditate. It's something that you can do in the comfort and privacy of your home. It's like saying that, the temple of God is within you. There are churches and mosques and synagogues outside, but those churches and synagogues and temples that are outside are only a symbol of the eternal temple that is within you. So you could be living in the world and very much be a mystic. You could be living in the world and yet be a spiritual person. What I'm trying to say is you don't need to go away to retreats and spiritual centers to meditate. Meditate just simply means to sit in silence and to get in touch with your inner essence. And in the Art of Witnessing CD, I have a 20-minute meditation, and I've used a very simple technique where you simply release all your thoughts and your stress and your emotions and your anger and just let go of them. And I think that that will take you closer to your inner essence.
Wow. Well, my beloved listeners, we're just so blessed to have had Mahmood Vali Muhammad with us today as we wrap up this program. thirsting for more of the goodness that he has to give. So please visit as soon as you can, artofhappylife.com, and you'll be in for many, many treats and blessings to your life. I thank you for tuning in today to the Advanced Living Hour, going to bbsradio.com, where you can, under Advanced Living, see some of the upcoming guests. Oh, some incredibly interesting folks are scheduled in the next few weeks. Visit advancedliving.com, my website, for some wonderful goodies to help bless your lives. And in the meantime, we have a holiday weekend here in the United States. And Mahmood, I want to personally thank you for this time. It is definitely a spiritual communion, spending time with you, and I just wish you all kinds of good blessings for the work you're doing, and I know that you're helping people tremendously, so thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Ken. It was an absolute honor and a pleasure to be on your show, and keep up the good work with your incredible show. I really enjoy it.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. And to you, Mahmood, and beloved listeners, to us all, God bless everyone and wish you a happy, happy week until we meet again next Saturday. Thank you and goodbye for now. Let's go.